You're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service. Welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for April 21st. Support for this reading comes from the DuPeco R.W. Heffer Foundation. I'm Jackie.
I'm Pat.
And here is our first story.
Hope and Challenges. In the spring of 2009, local LGBTQ plus community members were feeling a sense of hope. 15 years ago, in April 2009, Iowa legalized same-sex marriage, the third state in the nation, and the first Midwestern state to do so. LGBTQ plus individuals drove from hours away to get married in Dubuque, according to Telegraph Herald reports from that time. The atmosphere at the Dubuque County Courthouse was giddy on the first day the county began issuing same-sex marriage licenses. Indigo Perry lived in Dubuque at the time and said the legalization of same-sex marriage helped normalize LGBTQ plus rights. There was a lot of hope that came for people and a sense of community and belonging, because when you don't have the full right of inclusion as a member of community, you don't feel like you're part of that community, said Perry, who currently facilitates local support groups and the Dubuque LGBTQ plus resource network. There was a realization of, wow, this is our home. Much has changed in the 15 years since then. Dubuque's LGBTQ plus community has become more visible thanks to residents such as Perry, who helped build a network of resources and events from the ground up. While Iowa was once an early state to legalize same-sex marriage, however, it has not been immune to a national spike in bills and rhetoric that target LGBTQ plus individuals. The number of anti-LGBTQ plus bills proposed in Iowa jumped from 3 in the 2018 legislative session to 34 in 2024, according to the American Civil Liberties Union. Last year, Governor Kim Reynolds signed bills into law prohibiting gender-affirming care for transgender minors and banning transgender students from using school bathrooms that align with their gender identity. Local LGBTQ plus Iowans said they faced several isolation and discrimination growing up and that those tides have since shifted. However, the recent legislation impacting the community is sobering and disheartening for many. Despite what Iowa's shifting political winds might bring, leaders of the area's LGBTQ plus community say they decided to stay in Iowa to be the kind of adults they never saw growing up. We're basically striving to be the people that we needed when we were young, said Mad Punk, a hairdresser at Ritual Beauty in Dubuque. A hard time back then, said Jane McAuliffe, said the support of her family and friends when she came out is the most important thing. Now 50, McAuliffe says she didn't realize she was gay as a kid, but seeing other people come out made her feel more comfortable to do so when she was 35. It was a hard time back then, she said. Now, it's still hard in some aspects, but for me personally, I have all the support that I need from my family, friends, and family. Despite growing up in a traditional Irish Catholic family and in a heavily Catholic town, McAuliffe said her family and friends have been supportive from the beginning. She doesn't envy young kids coming out now, because while she said people generally are more accepting of the LGBT community, members still face challenges. McAuliffe has been married and divorced since coming out, and she has not dealt with many hateful people living in Dubuque. Andy Bodaroff, a licensed mental health therapist at New Moon Counseling Alliance in Dubuque, said growing up in Bellevue, Iowa, they always knew we were different. While there were a few other LGBTQ plus kids in the area, most people took an Iowa nice approach. We didn't directly confront homophobia or anything like that growing up here, but it was very much like you tell, it wasn't really something that was okay. Even after the Iowa Supreme Court decision that legalized same-sex marriage in 2009, Bodaroff said most people chose not to directly confront LGBTQ plus rights. Major theme of Bodaroff's childhood was being told to tone it down. They could love who they love, but should be quiet about it. Bodaroff left to attend college in Florida after turning 18 because they didn't feel they could be their true self in Iowa. I went to Orlando, Florida, and was immersed in culture and diversity, and I met so many other queer people and realized, oh no, Iowa was just the place that made me feel unsafe. Bodaroff ended up returning to Iowa to work in Dubuque as a practice that provides LGBTQ plus affirming therapy and a safe place for the community. While reasons for moving back included affordability and proximity to family, Bodaroff also felt a calling from a young age to be an LGBTQ therapist for others. Many local LGBTQ plus community members said a key aspect of their growing up was not seeing any adults who were like them, leaving them feeling isolated and alone. For some kids, that adult for younger kids motivates them to remain in Iowa. It was quite obviously like, okay, we need to be doing this because if we don't do it, it's going to make it more unsafe. Bodaroff likewise said part of their decision to move back to Iowa was to be a person they needed as a kid. Bodaroff commended the work of older generations of LGBTQ individuals in Dubuque, such as Perry, who paved the way for them to feel safe being out and operating practices that are friendly to the LGBT community. Perry said growing up in Dubuque in the late 1990s and early 2000s was difficult because there was not a prominent LGBTQ plus community. Those who were out were mostly adults who socialized in bars, so kids such as Perry did not have a chance to see or interact with LGBT community leaders. Spaniak said it is important to him that younger generations see LGBTQ plus community members in a variety of roles. He noted that many LGBTQ plus individuals seamlessly are integrated into the broader community, but it is still necessary for younger people to see others like them and know that they are supported. I want the future generations to realize that they have a place here in our community, that they have a home in our community, and that they feel safe in our community, he said.
Cities working to replace lead service lines. Platteville, Wisconsin. Across the tri-state area, communities are doing their best to get the lead out of residents' water pipes, that is. Through a variety of funding streams and programs, cities such as Dubuque and Platteville are working with property owners to remove lead service lines that carry water from city water mains to their properties. Lead piping is considered a health risk because of the danger that pipes can corrode and the lead can leach into the water. No level of lead exposure is considered safe, and it can lead to problems such as anemia, increased blood pressure, premature births, and behavior and learning problems for children. according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Platteville Public Works Director Howard Crowfoot said the state of Wisconsin has, since 2016, offered loan programs to help reimburse cities for the cost of lead service line removal. The city of Platteville took advantage of a lot of those programs, and we've removed over 500 lead service lines, he said. We've got a documented 108 remaining. Under the 2021 bipartisan infrastructure law, the federal government invested $50 billion to improve the nation's water and wastewater infrastructure distributed through state regulatory agencies, such as the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Thanks to that funding, Platteville residents currently can receive loans of up to $1,520 toward the replacement of lead service lines on their properties. The loans are 75% forgivable, up to $1,140, if the lines are replaced in accordance with DNR guidelines. Crowfoot and the city have sent letters to each Platteville property owner with documented lead service lines, and 9 so far have requested funding. He acknowledged that the fact the loan is only 75% forgivable has changed the calculus for property owners, since previous rounds of funding included 100% forgivable loans. Still, the city is working with residents to encourage them to take advantage of what funding is currently available. According to Crowfoot, the Wisconsin DNR has notified Platteville officials that if they do not remove all the city's lead service lines by September of 2025, the city must begin adding phosphate to its water to prevent corrosion of pipes. Not only is that an added cost for the city, it presents difficulties with the city's wastewater treatment plant, where the DNR issues fines for phosphates that are detected in discharge from the plant. That's another incentive for us to make sure that all the lead lines are gone, Crowfoot said. The city of Dubuque already adds phosphate to its water as part of a method Water Department Director Christopher Lester termed optimized corrosion control that makes any current risk from lead service lines minimal. Once over the next 3 years, thanks to an Iowa State revolving fund loan as part of the bipartisan infrastructure law, the city plans to replace lead water service lines at 585 homes at no cost to property owners. The loan is 49% forgivable, with the city of Dubuque repaying the other 51% at 0% interest. To comply with loan criteria, the homes where lead service lines are being replaced at no cost to property owners are within census tracts identified as socioeconomically disadvantaged. We're looking at replacing roughly 10% of the lead service lines that are out there in the city, Lester said. We're grateful to do that. We certainly wish we could do more, but it's certainly a unique opportunity, and we intend to seek additional funding to do more. He said work on the 200 lines the city intends to replace this calendar year tentatively will kick off by midsummer. The city of Galena is in the midst of its own lead service line replacement program, supported by nearly $2.76 million in funding from the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency. City engineer Matt Oldenburg said, "There are about 300 lead service lines in the city, based on surveys from residents who were asked to check the water lines in their homes through processes such as gently scratching the pipes to see its reaction and testing its magnetism." However, Oldenburg said,
That method is not entirely foolproof in detecting the presence of lead. The water line that's coming out of the wall in your house could be any material, like copper or plastic, but that doesn't necessarily mean that is what's buried in the ground and is the same material, he said. The only way to know for sure is exposing that line outside and looking at it to make sure that they don't have lead somewhere in their line. Therefore, the contractor hired by the city to complete the lead service line replacement is going door to door to check each house for lead pipes through a visual inspection and excavation of outdoor service lines if needed. If lead is detected, it is replaced at no cost to the homeowner. When we're done with this, we want to be able to say with certainty that we do not have lead in our water lines, Oldenburg said. Since work began in October, the city has replaced about 70 lead service lines, mainly on Galena's east side. Oldenburg said officials anticipate being able to replace about 150 to 200 lines with the current EPA funding, and the city plans to apply for additional funding to cover the remainder. East Dubuque also received a state grant of just over $500,000 to replace lead service lines, according to city manager Bob Seitz. The funding likely will not be sufficient to replace all the lead service lines in the city, but Seitz said contractor Fisher Excavating will work through the grant until the money is gone, replacing lines at no cost to homeowners.
Local women with low vision gather to share experiences, advances in tech. Gathered around a long table in the back of Caroline's restaurant in Dubuque, a group of women laughed, joked, ate, and shed a tear or two over lunch. A group of nearly 20 women who either have low vision or are a friend or caregiver of someone with low vision came together for the first time Friday to share technology that makes their lives easier, their experiences living with low vision, and the treatments they receive. I want to share our stories, our experiences, our technology, our treatment, everything on our journey. And I want you to be here to help too, because what we can learn from each other is amazing, Patty Bean, the event's organizer, said to the group. Also at the luncheon was Katie Sturgill, Senior Director of Development at the University of Iowa Institute for Vision Research, who answered questions about current research happening at the Institute. The women ranged in age from their late teens to early 90s and discussed technology like the Siri feature on iPhones and Amazon's Alexa, which helps individuals with low vision navigate online without looking at a screen. Your cell phone is your eyes, Bean of Dubuque told the women. I ask Alexa everything. What's the weather? What's the temperature? What's the day of the week? My pop culture, my calendar, phone numbers, just ask voice and activation. Bean, who lost most of her sight about 32 years ago, is a genetic disorder called retinitis pigmentosa. She said she wanted to gather other women with low vision in the tri-state area to discuss what they are going through and support for each other. Bean said she, like many of the attendees, misses driving, traveling, shopping, and going about her daily life. Despite the challenges that come with losing one's vision, Bean said she won't let it take over her life. This eye disease will not define who I am. A mother, I'm a wife, I'm a sister, I am a daughter, I am a friend. I am a neighbor. I'm a teacher. And I'm a wild Greek woman that's a lot of passion, she said. Many women shared the same laments about the loss of independence that came with losing their vision. The inability to drive or complete everyday tasks alone continues to be a major struggle for them. For Mary Alice Walsh, who has low vision, her eyesight took a turn for the worse a few months ago, forcing her to stop driving. I drove everywhere several times a day, Walsh said. I don't like the fact that I am home some days because I can't get out and just go. Walsh has wet macular degeneration and said losing more of her eyesight has certainly been difficult, but she is remaining positive about it. Sturgill answered questions attendees had about the research being done on the various diseases that cause vision loss, but most voiced her support for the women. Vision loss is as much a physical condition as it is mental and emotional, and it doesn't just impact the one person. It impacts their entire family or community around them.
This week in review, Dubuque Council adopts fiscal year 2025 budget with 0.25% increase in property tax rate. Dubuque City Council members on Monday adopted a fiscal year 2025 budget with the lowest property tax rate among Iowa's largest cities. The council voted to adopt the budget 7-0 following a public hearing at its regularly scheduled meeting. Council members approved a property tax rate of $9.93 per $1,000 of assessed value. That equates to $28.2 million in property tax revenue. The 0.25% increase in the property tax rate will equal a 5% tax increase for the average homeowner. The average residential assessed value in Dubuque is $196,508, which equates to an increase of $40.75 for the city portion of residents' tax bills. The average payment for commercial and industrial property owners also is set to rise. Dubuque will have the lowest property tax rate among the state's 11 largest cities and the second lowest property taxes per capita at $579.01 per year. Council member Susan Farber read her remarks about the budget from a prepared statement. This year's budget proves that city staff is prudent, Farber said. We all recognize that the cost of living is rising, and the budget reflects this reality. Feels like you belong. Local Women Veterans Group hopes to bridge gaps, build connections. Dawn Fleming is no stranger to being the only woman in the room. Fleming of Dubuque served in the Iowa National Guard from 2004 to 2019, including a stint in Afghanistan. For a time, she was one of 15 women in a battalion rounded out by more than 500 men. The imbalance was obvious, Fleming said. But in some ways, it was even more glaring when she came home. I didn't really ever think we had a big female veteran population in Dubuque. I only knew the women I served with, and they all lived out of town, she said. Nobody talked about it, so it almost felt like we weren't there at all. Seeking to reverse that trend, Fleming now serves as the president of Tri-State Women Warriors, a group dedicated to supporting and uplifting women veterans. The group began meeting regularly in 2022, though it just recently obtained nonprofit status. Members now meet monthly to discuss issues facing women during and after their military service, and the group also hosts social, volunteer, and advocacy-focused events. Board Vice President and Treasurer Christy Na Schauer of East Dubuque, Illinois, said the good of the group is to act as a complement and bridge to other typically male-dominated area veterans and their service organizations.
University of Dubuque's next president seeks to build on success. University of Dubuque officials have announced the school's next president. Travis Frampton, who currently serves as provost and vice president for academic affairs at Schreiner University in Kerrville, Texas, will assume the role June 1st. He will be the university's 12th president. He holds a Bachelor of Arts in Religion from Samford University in Birmingham, Alabama, a Master of Arts in Religion from Yale Divinity School, New Haven, Connecticut, and a dual PhD in Philosophy and Religion from Erasmus University, Rotterdam in the Netherlands, and Baylor University in Waco, Texas. Frampton, 51, said he is excited to build on what he sees as a tradition of success at UD. The work they've done in that campus, particularly in the last 2.5 decades, is really phenomenal. It's an exceptional value of what can happen in higher education. When you get all the people who are responsible for carrying the mission out, working together to achieve the same goal. I'm very invested in continuing that story into the future. Frampton will replace the Reverend Jeffrey Bullock, who has been UD's president since 1998. In March 2023, Bullock announced that he had initiated plans to step away from the presidency. Heavy tourism expected at Fields of Dreams site as work continues on related projects. Dyersville, Iowa. Leaders of the Field of Dreams movie site hope to knock out of the park this year in terms of tourism attraction, while work continues on several related projects across the Dyersville area. Travel Dubuque CEO Keith Ray said an estimated $500,000 worth of capital improvements have been completed at the movie site since last fall, in preparation for the tens of thousands of people expected to visit this summer. Travel Dubuque oversees the management of the movie site, which is owned by Go the Distance Baseball. This is a very, very special place for people from all over the world, Ray said. We want to make their experience as great as we can for every person, every day. Recent improvements at the site include a 1,300-foot expansion of the event, as well as the addition of permanent public restrooms, fiber optic internet, and cosmetic touch-outs throughout the site.
You are listening to the Dubuque Telegraph Herald on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. Your reader is Jackie.
And Pat.
If you have any comments on this or any IRIS program, please call 243-6833 or toll free at 877-404-4747. And don't forget, this and many other IRIS programs are available from our website at iowaradioreading.org. Now we return to the Telegraph Herald.
The obituaries. Daryl F. Jones. Daryl F. Jones, 84, of Dubuque, passed away April 16, 2024, at Oak Park Place. Full military honors will be accorded by the Dubuque Marine Corps League. Interment will be at St. Paul Cemetery, Mineral Point, Wisconsin. Daryl was born on September 6, 1939, to Wendell and Mary Bride Jones in Ellenborough Township, Wisconsin. He attended Peniel School, a one-room schoolhouse in Wuri, Wisconsin, as a child. Daryl graduated from Schulzberg High School in 1957, where he earned the name Fireball. Daryl enlisted in the United States Navy in 1957 and honorably served our country for 3 years while stationed in California. He was united in marriage to Mary Ellen Deschini on February 8, 1964. They had three wonderful children together. They shared several years together in California before moving to Dubuque. Gerald loved dancing, listening to live music, motorcycle riding, and traveling to Las Vegas. He cherished time spent with his children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his parents and siblings, Dale and Dean Jones and Jackie Krupke. Daryl Jones Memorial Fund has been established. Daryl's family wishes to extend a special place to Dr. Kyle, Oak Park Place, and St. Crow Hospice, especially Alyssa, Jackie, and Mitchell for the wonderful care given to Daryl. Your kindness and compassion will never be forgotten.
Dennis L. Hamilton, Stockton, Illinois. Dennis L. Hamilton, 82, of Stockton, died on Tuesday, April 9, 2024. No services will be held. Herman Funeral Home of Stockton is assisting the family. Kenneth L. Galis, Lanark, Illinois, celebration of life 1 to 4 p.m. with a service at 2:30 p.m. Saturday, May 4th at Manny's Pizza in Savannah. Miriam L. Hullman, Platteville, Wisconsin, celebration of life 1 to 3 p.m. with service at 1:30 p.m. today at Malby Funeral Home and Crematory in Platteville. Stanley G. Samuel, St. Donatus, Iowa, visitation 1 to 3 p.m. today at Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, service at 3 p.m. today at the funeral home. Peter D. McGorry. Peter Dennis McGorry, 79, recently of Dubuque, Iowa, left this earthly world on March 1, 2024 in Dubuque, Iowa, after a short battle with brain cancer. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. on April 27, 2024 at St. Dominic's Catholic Church in Northfield, Minnesota. Friends can gather 1 hour before a visitation with the family. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, Dubuque, Iowa, assisted the family. Peter was the second born to Thomas A. McGorry and Jean McGorry in Freeport, New York. He studied at the Montford Preparatory Seminary in Bayshore, New York, Farmingdale Technical College, St. John's University in New York, and finished his master's degree at Montana State University in Bozeman. It was in Farmingdale that Peter met the love of his life, Jean. After they both graduated from St. John's University in New York on August in 1969, they started their adventure together. They believed the rest of the country was their backyard and looked to find their next adventure. They settled in the Midwest, living in both Wisconsin and Minnesota, finally settling in Cannon Falls, Minnesota, where they raised their young family. Peter started his career as a teacher, working in New York, then in Wisconsin and Minnesota. He worked for many years for the General Council of Finance and Administration of the United Methodist Church, but his great love was teaching. Teaching children from kindergarten to their senior year to explore the world around them and find the joy in reading in his final years. His greatest role was teaching elementary students to read and find their passion in life. Peter was always active in the communities he lived in, serving in the Cannon Falls JCs, to the local Dubuque Noon Optimists, any place where he could find the lives of where he could make the lives of children better. He enjoyed spending time during the week supporting the Miracle League of Dubuque, teaching children to read at Sibley Elementary School in St. Mark Youth Enrichment, and teaching the joy of baseball come alive in children brought him great joy. If you know Peter, you quickly fell in love with him. He wore his love of teaching and faith on his sleeve at every moment of the day. He knew how to share the right information just at the moment you needed it most, and all of his children can attest to that. Even in his last days, he was teaching. He believed he needed to be of service if he was going to be of this world. He always believed at any moment you may meet Jesus in any stranger, and he left that belief and legacy with his children. Those left to honor Peter are his children, Peter, Beth, Matthew, and Christopher, his grandchildren, his in-laws, and several nieces and nephews. Preceded in death, the love of his life, Joan, of 51 years, brother-in-law Tom, his parents Tom and Jean, and his in-laws William and Mary. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to St. Mark Youth Enrichment or the Buffalo High School Marching Band. The family wishes to thank the staff at Mercy One Hospital, especially the team in cardiac rehab, Dr. Naomi Hasselblad, the amazing staff at Stonehill and Hospice of Dubuque, while his stays with them were not always long. You made an impression on him and showed so much kindness and compassion, especially in his last days.
Jerome J. Walsh, 64, of Dubuque, passed away at Unity Point Findlay Hospital on April 17, 2024. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Monday. A service at 2:30 will be held with Deacon David Roth officiating. He was born July 11, 1959 in Dubuque, Iowa, the son of Ronald and Mary Welsh. He graduated from Dubuque Senior High School. Jerome met Cyril Welsh, and they married on March 23, 1996 in Dubuque. Jerome retired from the City of Dubuque Street Department after 38 years of service. He was proud of his ability to run any equipment, especially his dozer work for 17 years at the landfill. He was a Green Bay Packers fan and would often be on the phone with Mark or Ray while he was alive during the season discussing the game. He was also an avid New York Yankees fan, so much so that he and Cyril's honeymoon was centered around Yankee spring training. He got to visit old Yankee Stadium in 2008 before the present stadium was completed, and his all-time favorite player was Thurman Munson. Since retirement, Jerome liked simple things, sitting on the front porch during warm weather, listening to music, and tossing a ball for his puppy, Millie. His taste in music leaned toward rock, with Beatles, Rolling Stones, and Led Zeppelin being his favorite bands. He also liked some newer music and blues as well. Following a stroke 2 years ago, he spent a lot of time watching TV when it was too cold to sit outside. He always made sure to catch reruns of Gunsmoke, Bonanza, Twilight Zone, and Columbo. Jerome is survived by his wife of 28 years and his daughter Stephanie. His grandchildren also surviving are his siblings, Rhonda Welsh, Kevin Welsh, Tim Welsh, Sandy Welsh, and Deborah Welsh, along with many nieces, nephews, cousins, and many, many forever friends. He loved you all. He was preceded in death by his parents, grandparents, mother-in-law, aunts, and uncles, and his best buddy, Ray Cripe. The family would like to thank all the staff at Unity Point Findlay ICU in Fifth Floor. Thanks for putting up with the grumpy old man. You are all so kind and attentive, and you'll never know how much I appreciate all of you.
Terry N. Frank. Terry Frank, 87, of Dubuque, Iowa, passed away peacefully on April 16th at home, surrounded by his family. friends and family may visit from 11 until 2 p.m. on Tuesday, April 23rd at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. A funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. at the funeral home with Reverend Diane Grace officiating. A private family burial will be held at Mount Olivet Cemetery. A continued celebration of life will be held at the Dubuque Moose Lodge, number 355, 2635 Windsor Avenue, following the funeral service. The family invites everyone to wear their favorite sports apparel, as Terry was an avid Iowa Hawkeye and Dallas Cowboy fan. Terry was born March 11, 1937, in Osceola, Iowa, the son of Ross and Ina Frank, on December 1st, 2006, he married the love of his life, Karen Meyer. Terry received his diploma from Des Moines Technical High School before going on to earn a Bachelor of Science in Economics from Drake University. After graduation, Terry went on to work in insurance, mostly for Pekin Insurance, as an adjuster field representative, field manager, and as the regional sales manager before retiring in March of 2000. Terry was a member of the Dubuque Moose Lodge No. 355 and the Dubuque Eagles Club. He enjoyed playing golf, cheering on the Iowa Hawkeyes, Dallas Cowboys, and Jeff Gordon when watching NASCAR races. Terry and Karen enjoyed going on cruises and traveling to many places like Florida, Nashville, and Arizona. They enjoyed Arizona so much, they purchased a house there and were snowbirds for 14 years. Terry loved spending time with his grandkids, whether it was attending one of the many sporting or dance events, or playing a serious game of Rocco or Go Fish at the house. He loved to read, do puzzles, especially Sudoku, and play solitaire. He could also often be found on the back porch, enjoying a CC and water. Those left to cherish his memory are his wife Karen of Dubuque, his children Neil, Jody, Mike, Karen's daughter Dawn, Kelly, and Stacy, 10 grandchildren, and special friends. He is preceded in death by his parents and his granddaughter, Brianna Leach, in 2020. The family would like to thank Hospice of Dubuque for the special care they gave to Terry these last 3 months.
Mary Beebe Johns McWilliams, 95, of Cuba City, Wisconsin, passed away at St. Dominic Villa, Hazel Green, Wisconsin, on Friday, April 19, 2024. A Mass of Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, April 23rd at St. Rose of Lima Church in Cuba City with Reverend David Flanagan officiating. The burial will be in the church cemetery. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Monday at Casey McNett Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Cuba. Beebe was born on October 12, 1928 in Cuba City, Wisconsin, to Thomas and Mary Banfield. She was united in marriage to James Johns on November 26, 1946 at St. Rose of Lima Church. He preceded her in death on November 13, 1974. She was united in marriage to Bob McWilliams on June 18, 1982 at St. Rose of Lima Church. He preceded her in death on September 30, 1985. Beebe, a farm girl at heart, worked as a bus driver for Stratton Bus Company. She was a proud member of Catholic Daughters and the City of President's Committee. Above all, God, family, and country were most important to her, and of course, Cuba City. Beebe was a woman of deep faith, and she passed this on to her family. She possessed a genuine spiritual good in everyone and never wanting anything in return but for them to be happy. She was deeply proud of her two sons, Bob and Les, who served in Vietnam at the same time. Bebe was famous for her apple pie and enjoyed spending time at Bagley, preferably by the bonfire. Proud of her Irish heritage, Bebe believed if you're lucky enough to be Irish, you're lucky enough. She is survived by four daughters, Mary Alice, Kay, Julie, Veronica, two sons, Bob, John, and other relatives. She was preceded in death by her parents, her two husbands, a granddaughter, three sisters. The family would like to thank Dr. Matthew Kirkendall and his nurse, Katie, for their compassionate care of Beth. In lieu of flowers, a Mary B. McWilliams Memorial Fund has been established. Memorials may be sent to the funeral home at 123 North Jackson City, Cuba City, Wisconsin, 53807.
David O. Schrader. David O. Schrader, age 70, of Dubuque, Iowa, completed his earthly journey on April 19th at home while surrounded by his loving family. To honor David's life, a celebration of life will be held at a later date. Burial will be in the Mount Hope Cemetery in Maquoketa, Iowa. David was born on August 23, 1953 in Maquoketa, one of three sons to Asher and Catherine Schrader. He made adventure a priority in his life early on and eventually found himself working in the culinary arts as a chef in both New Orleans and Deer Valley, Utah. He was well known for his skills and enjoyed every new offering he perfected. David spent the remainder of his working years as a registered nurse and found great pride in helping to take care of his father in his later years, and most recently worked at Mount St. Francis until his retirement in 2019 finally arrived. David was an artist by trade in his free time and created many works of art in a variety of mediums over the years. Many of his acrylic paintings adorn the walls of family and friends to this day and remain as a cherished memory of David's time and talents on display for all to enjoy. David was also an animal lover, and his cats were treated like royalty every day. His devotion to all of God's creation never wavered, and David did his very best to spread love wherever he found himself. David enjoyed gardening as well and was an avid collector of antique clocks and anything eclectic. His tastes were unique and always spot on. It's going to be difficult to face the days ahead without David's positive force moving among us in so many ways. Thank you, David, for leaving behind a legacy of love for all who knew and loved you to treasure until we see you again. Those left to treasure the memory of David include his two brothers, John and William, his dear friend Jacques Johnson, along with numerous nieces, nephews, extended family, friends, and neighbors. David was preceded in death by his parents and his partner of 19 years, Peter Carlstrom. David's family would like to thank the nurse and staff at Hospice of Dubuque, especially Buffy, for all their professional and compassionate care. Online condolences may be shared with David's family at www.tristatecremationcenter.com.
Sandra K. Steger, Davenport, Iowa. We are sad to announce the passing of Sandra K. Steger of Davenport and formerly of Dyersville. She died at the age of 63, April 14th. Sandra passed away surrounded by her loved ones after a short but aggressive battle with lung cancer. She's an amazing woman with the biggest heart. She loved being a mom, grandmother, and great-grandmother. And man, was she the best. Preceded in death by her son Chad, her father David, and grandparents Emil, Emil, and Lucille Rettinger. Those left to honor her memory include her daughters. To honor our mother's wishes, there will be no visitation or funeral services. We will do a celebration of life at a later date. We invite you to please privately celebrate Sandra's memory in your own ways. We know that she will be with us all in spirit. Thank you for understanding during this difficult time.
That completes today's obituaries. Let us turn to the editorial for Sunday. Yoakum served Iowa Dubuque well for more than three decades. As the Iowa legislature wraps up its 2024 session, so too does the sunset on the political career of a dedicated Iowa leader, Dubuque's own Senator Pam Yoakum. For more than three decades, Yoakum has been engaged, knowledgeable, and diligent in her work on behalf of not only her constituents, but all Iowans. Citizens of the state and of the Dubuque area have had a stalwart advocate in Yoakum. Yoakum's political career began in the fall of 1992 when she first was elected to the Iowa House of Representatives. In 2008, she won election to the Iowa Senate, representing what is now Senate District 36, encompassing the city of Dubuque and portions of Dubuque County, and served most recently as Iowa Senate Minority Leader. Yoakum headed to Des Moines when Iowa was still reeling from the farm crisis and Dubuque from dark days of 23% unemployment. But she always believed in the best of Iowans and knew brighter days lay ahead. Born and raised in Dubuque, Yoakum often has referred to the strong roots, work ethic, and ideals she gained here. She graduated at the top of her class at Wallard High School and Loras College. Influence growing up included her father, who worked for Dubuque Packing Company, her mother, who raised six children and volunteered at neighborhood schools, and the sisters of the multiple religious orders in Dubuque. The good sisters instilled a passion for justice in me. They taught with their words and their actions that all persons are created equal, and they taught us that to fail to speak up and do what's right is to fail to do our duty as children, Yoakum once told the TH. Democracy, equality, justice were not just words we learned in school. The sisters taught us that they were ideals that we should seek to advance in our personal and our public lives. A veteran of the Capitol, Yoakum knew how to make an impact, even when her party was in the minority. She understands the nuance of the legislative process and long has been committed to transparency in government. She has used her deep roots to form relationships with elected officials on both sides of the aisle as well as at state departments. That connectedness paid dividends in amending legislation to make it better, something for which Yoakum long has had a knack. Yoakum's effectiveness as a legislator best was showcased in her advocacy for the state's most vulnerable people. As the mother of a daughter with an intellectual disability, Yoakum never needed reminding about the challenges people face, whether those challenges are medical, financial, or emotional. During her time in office, Yoakum has been one of the most consistent forces in Iowa Democratic politics, spending a stint as Senate President, aiding numerous Democratic presidential campaigns ahead of the Iowa caucuses, and holding significant influence over her caucus in the legislature. There are those who might look at a lawmaker who served for 30 years and put them in the mold of career politician. But that label doesn't really gain traction, doesn't gain traction with anyone who has paid attention to Yoakum's track record. She has been a tireless voice for Iowans, particularly those who have no voice of their own. That has been her motivation, not gaining political clout. Over the years, Yoakum held numerous leadership positions in both the House and the Senate, and made many friends and political opponents in her district and in the legislature. But senators from both sides of the aisle in the final days of another contentious session said Yoakum is a prime example of how lawmakers should serve. In a resolution passed by the full Senate to honor her retirement, these words captured some of her accomplishments. Senator Yoakum has had an inspirational legislative career, being described as passionate, tenacious, and committed to her community and to dignity for all people, serving as a tremendous role model for women and having respected and being respected for her ability to build coalitions and get things done for Dubuque and for Iowa, all while humbly acknowledging that you just can't ask for more of an honor than for people to have enough belief and trust in you that they send you to be their voice. Yoakum's extensive knowledge of the issues, the legislative process, and her record of accomplishment have served Dubuque and Iowa well. With gratitude, we salute her decades of hard work and leadership. May she inspire others to shine in public service. That brings us to the end of today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for April 21st. I'm your reader, Jackie.
I'm Pat.
Support for this reading comes from the DuPac ORW Heifer Foundation. The Telegraph Herald can be heard each weekday at 2 p.m. All programs heard on IRIS are intended solely for the blind and print handicapped. If you have any questions or comments on this or any IRIS program, please call our office toll-free at 877-404-4747. Thank you for listening.